So, guys, this is our first podcast that we recorded, a podcast, video cast, whatever you want to call them. It's going to be both. Today, I've got Naz, who's just joined the company about 3 months ago now, or 2 months ago. And he's going to be asking me a set of questions that we've asked people on social media, as well as just on all sorts of platform, and also some of the mentees that are on the course with me at the moment, about some of the questions they would like to ask that either they haven't been answered, or they're thinking about coming to title split and property investment as a strategy, and thinking about, but they've got these questions that they want to ask. So Naz, welcome to Quiddity Property Education, and it's great to have you here. So over the next kind of 10-15 minutes, we're going to go through these questions, and you're going to basically try and catch me out.
That is the hope anyway. 25 years, if you can't answer these questions, you've got a real problem, man. Seriously. Okay, let's go for it. So do you find that lending from individual flats is more expensive, and that there are fewer lending options when you or your limited company keep all the units in the block?
Okay, so the question here basically is, you know, when you are buying, let's take an example. So I do a lot of actual rather than hypothetical. So if we're buying a block of 10 flats, so the question is asking, well, if we then split them, is it cheaper to keep them under one lender or 10 different lenders, for example? So the answer is actually, quite frankly, first of all, you could potentially get one lender to take the commercial and take a commercial mortgage on it. Is it cheaper? My guess is going to be no, because a buy-to-let standard mortgage tends to be cheaper than a commercial mortgage, firstly. Second, on a commercial mortgage, you tend to be asked to pay a repayment as well as the interest only, whereas a standard buy-to-let, you can go for an interest only. So from my strategy, as you know now, we're all about passive income generation. So if you're buying something to make money out of it, you want to make money today, not in 25 years from now. But you just fully answer the question around, is it cheaper to split them and give them to multiple banks? The answer is yes, it's cheaper to potentially do that. Most importantly, one lender on a standard buy-to-let will not take all 10. That's a given. They don't want to be exposed to 100% of the risk on that building. So you will, in this example, 10 flats, you'll probably end up needing about 3 to 4 lenders taking 2 to 3 each of the block.
After the title split, do you usually secure financing for all the flats with one lender, or do you refinance them individually with different lenders?
Okay.
For example, if a block of 4 flats, would you typically have 4 mortgages with one lender, or 4 mortgages with 4 different lenders?
Okay, so it's a little bit similar to the first question. So, but just to kind of almost paraphrase the question. Yeah. So when you are splitting blocks, do you stick to be one lender for the whole thing, or do you go with 1, 2, or 3 lenders for different units? So let's take the example that we're working on at the moment. We've got 5 flats at the moment that we're going to refinance in the Midlands, and this one's going to be carved out onto separate leases, and these leases will go to probably 2 different lenders. And these lenders then will offer out long-term buy-to-let mortgages that we will then fix on. Typically, I go for 5 years. Why? Because once you've done it once, I don't want to be doing it again, and I keep them for 5 years. People will say, well, it's a little bit more expensive at the start. Well, quite frankly, by the time you do a 2-year and you do it twice, or 2.5 times in a 5-year period, you end up paying the solicitors twice, brokers twice, bridger, arrangement fee, all that cost becomes quite a lot of money. So that's why we end up going with 2 or 3 different lenders, fixing for 5 years. Yeah.
Okay, next question is, if you're simply splitting the title into individual leases without any physical development or change of use, should CIL and Section 106 apply? Have you ever encountered a situation where CIL or Section 106 applied when carrying out a title split?
Okay, that's a great question. It's quite a tough question. So just for listeners who don't understand what CIL is, it's basically a payment, community investment levy is called. So CIL, community investment levy. And that's typically payable when, let's say, you buy a plot of land and you're going to put 100 units on that plot of land in a block. typically, the council will be saying to you, you need, there's a CI, there's a seal payment due, or a section 106 due, depending on the circumstances. So it's a very similar thing. They were asking for money to put in a pot so that the local council can use part of that money to invest in extra GP surgeries, school places, road infrastructure, etc., etc. So that's big. I mean, tends to be quite larger units, larger developments in an area. Now, coming back to the question, how, you know, if you're not doing, you buy a block and it's got, let's say, for example, 50 units, for an example. I mean, right now we were looking at one up in Cumbria, and there's about, I think, 50 units in one of them. So the question is asking, well, if you bought this 50 and you carved it out on separate leases, and right now it's on one freehold, will seal be payable? In this instance, it wouldn't be, purely because it's already there. So the building, mostly for title split, when I'm actually buying or mentees of mine are buying blocks of flats, it's already in existence. That's why I like this the strategy, because you're not buying something to spend 2 years to build it. You're buying something that's physically already there. Take a block of 50 flats in one area. It's physically there, rented to 50 different people, council taxes there. So for the answer, for the purpose of the question, there's going to be no seal and no section 106 payable, because you're not creating brand new things that will need extra resources in the area. Makes sense.
Yep. And next one,
okay,
quite an interesting one, block management. How do you handle block management? Do you establish a management company for each block, or do you use external block management companies?
Okay, so the honest truth is, when I was moonlighting and I was working in the company and buying things on the side where it wasn't our my main kind of company, I was actually farming it out to estate agents at some point. But then it got to a point where it got too many and I could justify bringing it in-house. So right now, Quiddity Group has got an arm called Quiddity Property Estate Management, I should say. Quiddity Estate Management manages all of our properties in-house. So we've got property managers that work for Quiddity Group that then manages all of our tenants and all of our estates. Now, what would I do if I was a mentee or somebody coming into title split and buying their first block? Well, typically now we're saying, look, we are going all over the country. We're finding passive income generating assets. When we buy those, even us now, I'm getting my property managers to manage the estate agents. So to answer the question more in more depth, I would say the block management, if it's not in our area, say within an hour and a half of where we live or the property managers live, we will give it to local estate agents, and then the property managers will manage the estate agents, who then manage the building.
Okay. So another question is from what I understand, you can't issue new leases to yourself and would need to use a different entity. Would this trigger off SDLT?
Fabulous question. So one of the things that happens when you're title splitting blocks of flat is because you are ultimately buying one unit on a freehold and then you put it on separate leases. Typically, depending on how you've structured, and this is why the group company structure module, when we're doing this on the course, matters a lot, because if you buy the freehold and your group company structure is not effectively in place, you will have to sell, in inverted brackets, sell those leases to a different company, and that will trigger the second time of stamp duty. So one time on entry when you buy it, and second time when you put it onto separate leases and you give it to a different company. Because why do you do that? Because as the questioner is asking here, you're not allowed to have Quiddity Group owning the freehold and the leasehold. So you have to, in our case, we've got Quiddity Freehold owning all the freehold and Quiddity Group owning all the assets itself. So the questioner is right in saying you're not allowed to have one entity holding everything. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that is? Okay, you're nodding because you're not sure. So
give us the answer.
So yeah. one of the things, if you think about it, one of the things, so some lender must have got bitten at one point, because they realized that actually, if I'm judge and jury on my leases and my freehold, tomorrow I can easily go and change the freehold and take out their interest.
Yeah.
In this way, they by being registered to land registry, the freehold, and there's a charge on the leases, let's say bank A, B, C, and D on the leases, when you try to change the freehold to eradicate their debt, they will get a trigger by land registry to say, hang on a minute, are you happy that this charge being expunged, and of course they're not going to be happy, and then that's what stops it, and that's why you have to have that separate entity. So otherwise, lenders, what happens if you don't have it? Lenders don't lend to you, and then you get stuck. You have a block that you've done all the works to it, but you can't refinance that because of your structure.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really good question. Traditional flats have ground rent, service charges, council tax. Once the title is split, will each flat have its own charges applied, and who would be responsible for these, tenants or landlords?
Okay, so taking some actual examples. So the question is asking, once you've split the title and you've created separate leases for separate units, who's responsible for each bill basically per flat? So the council tax, gas, water, electricity, broadband, whatever the bill might be. So in this case, if you take another example of ours, the one that we bought in Kent, six flats, we've then bought it as one unit and separated it as six separate units. Now the crux here is about how and what we buy. So ultimately, when I'm teaching people how to invest into title split, we're looking for things that's already split well. And there are nine criteria that I talk about in the course, that if the building doesn't meet those nine criteria, we don't buy it. And there's quite a few people that, you know, have bought things and realized and come to me afterwards and said, can I do this? Can I do that? So, well, unfortunately, you can't, because the building is not structured in that way. Mm. But just to complete the question around, so who then pays for it? So once we've taken the Kent out, for example, we've done the title split, we've put the six flats on six separate leases, and we are refinancing them out. That's great. That's the money coming out to pay us back on our money. We put six tenants in there, but these people will be then responsible to pay their gas, electricity, water, council tax, or the designation. So it's a very similar way as, let's say you buy a commercial unit and you convert into flats. There, you have a lot more work because you don't have an existing building that's already got six units in it. You are creating the six units. So then you have to go down the route of planning permission, getting addresses sorted, naming an address section of the council. There's a lot more process, whereas title split here in this example, the unit's already there. You know, we are just, as I always call it, it's a wholesale to retail. So we're taking something big and then breaking into chunks. But ultimately, the nine criteria of the building has to be there for us to buy it. And if it's there, we don't have an issue then with bills.
Okay. So next question is, how, if at all, are the leasehold reforms going to impact this strategy?
Wow, that's a big question. Leasehold reforms. So how is leasehold reform due in 2025 going to impact this strategy? So one of the biggest thing questions I get on social media is, let's talk about the three top things that are changing in leasehold reforms. One, no more ground rent. And that's been there since 2023. So ground rent is something that's so archaic that landlords were collecting from tenants just for being on their land. It's so archaic, it dates back to hundreds of years. So that's going to be, that's been annulled already. Now you get down to peppercorn rent. The second thing that's going to come with leasehold reform is the number of years on a lease. So typically, leaseholds to get 99 years or 125 years in historical sense. After leasehold reform kicks in 2025, when the law becomes law, actually, that will go to 999 years. So really, virtual freehold. And the third thing will come is there's something that they're basically getting rid of some terms. So freehold will stay, but freehold will mean something different. Leasehold will go, and it will be replaced by common hold. And what they're trying to do is saying the common hold person who owns a flat in a building has a lot more right than a leaseholder currently. Mm. And those rights are as follows. So as a common hold lessee, for example, they are automatically added to the common hold association. This is basically block management of that building. Right now, if you buy a leasehold, you don't maybe have a say about what happens to that building, because the leaseholder or the freeholder will decide they want all the windows changed for 50 grand. Whereas when you are buying a flat after the leasehold reform, you will be able to have a say because you're going to be part of that common hold association, which is the block management part of it. And as soon as you buy it, everybody gets equal rights into that common hold association. So those are kind of the three main things that are changing. But just to be clear, how does that impact title splitting as a strategy? Are people going to still be able to buy a block and carve it out wholesale to retail and put them on and separate leasehold? The answer is definitely yes. The only difference is they're not going to be called leasehold, they're going to be called common hold lease. You're going to have 999 years given, still a freehold separate, 999 years somewhere else. But ultimately, you're going to still be adding value. And as I always say, we add value in three ways in title split. We buy below market value, 33%. We add value by a light refurb, 33%. And the last 33% is basically wholesale to retail, carve it out onto separate leaseholds. And that's the last bit of the kind of the adding value. And those three add up to your 100% uplift. And that 100% uplift is what we use to get pretty much 100% mortgage, because you're using that as your capital, as your deposit across all flats.